Yeah, let's get to it for crying out loud. Been goofing off all week. I'm just kidding. No, it's been a busy week. As most of you know, I had that knee surgery done on Wednesday. Man, it has been really fantastic. No problems whatsoever. Okay, that's a lie. But really, seriously, surgery went very well. And I'm back on it. I'm going to talk about the week a little bit here in just a second, but I wanted to get some kind of initial announcements out of the way. First of all, this is the fastest hour on Real Liberty Media, and I don't turn left, so don't expect it. And could y'all please just post to any social media sites that you're on, get your friends to come over and join us live here on Real Liberty Media. We're building Real Liberty Media back up again. And you know, there's some things that we have to do that. And one of those things is get the word out that we're on. I post on Truth and Minds, and I didn't post on Facebook, and I hate to do it while I'm on the air because I'll get distracted. So if any of you are on Facebook, if you'd post it, I could probably sneak it in here because I'm going to talk about something else for just a second. The Perseid meteor shower is going on right now. So, it actually peaked on the 11th and 12th, I think. So, see, I'm getting distracted. Let's just, come on, paste. Okay, paste. And post. Okay, done. Facebook is done. There we go. Anyway, the Perseid meteor shower, every year I like to lay out at night and watch the Perseid meteor shower. It goes on for like a month. But it has a peak time where the number of meteors per hour are the highest, and that was the last couple nights. So, but you can still see plenty of them. We've seen them every night that we've been out looking. So if you like to stargaze, you know, there's a lot of satellites going on out there, and the Perseid's firing off. It's pretty entertaining. And, you know, kind of peaceful. It gives you a little chance to just get away from everything and relax and enjoy life. Okay. So let's talk about the week, the surgery a little bit. I had a meniscus tear, my left knee, had it repaired. They also did a little sculpting of some bone because there was some arthritis that was, you know, interfering or causing some problems or whatever. So, that was fine. The first day, Wednesday, no problem. Woke up from the surgery, came home, no pain. I was able to stand on my leg, and I was babying it a bit, of course, and I wasn't in the mood to stand up, so I didn't much, but I could. And then Thursday was fine, no pain. Thursday night, kind of didn't sleep real well, not because of pain so much with my knee, but where they, you know, oral pharyngeal tube that they put in when they put you to sleep, it kind of like, I don't know, scratched my lung or something. So I was coughing a bit and I was kind of sore. So I got up and sat in a recliner and finished my night's sleep. I got up about 1:30, I think, in the morning and sat in a recliner because then I could elevate my leg and I could elevate my chest and I could get comfortable and, you know, sleep. So that was fine. Really, not a big deal. It was just Thursday night into Friday, and yesterday was a little bit tender, kind of when I stood on it, and today's kind of tender, you know. But today I got to take the compression stocking off, so good, because I hated that thing. But it keeps you from getting blood clots and stuff like that. So, of course, you know, I'm going to follow all the instructions I can to have a good healing process, and there we have it. All right, man, this week, crazy week. Okay, I'm going to tell you guys, one of the things that I did do this week is, you know, I've been talking about my Obsidian program that I use to make the notes for the show. Well, because I was pretty much, you know, chair bound, I spent some time just looking at some tutorials and trying some stuff out. I'm telling you, man, it's crazy. There's no way we are getting through all of the information that I have in my notes for today, which is awesome because that just means I have material for the next show or the next show or the next show, whatever. But man, it has really become an efficient way to make some notes and to keep track of your thoughts. And anyway, for any of you who are looking for a nice app, you know, with a little bit of a learning curve, but really to start out with, it's, you can just start taking notes in it. But if you want to go look at some tutorials, try out Obsidian, man. I think it is fantastic. I'm not kidding. It's just like changed. I'm new to this whole thing, podcasting and streaming and all of that stuff. But this is one of those tools that just makes it so much easier. So right now, I'll tell you what I have up on my screen. I have the notes for the day, and I have a link to each section of my notes. And at the end of whatever I'm going to be reading, there's a go back to this section here, which is basically the table of contents, I would say. And so we'll be able to just like pound through it, you know, whatever it is. I wanted to start off by talking about this crazy, the farmers here in, that's kind of funny. Let me go find this. And so I just wanted to kind of review this kind of history of what happened in Washington this year. It's interesting because it'll tell you, like, even though, fertilizer has been restricted because of availability and because I think the World Economic Forum doesn't want farmers to grow enough food to feed everybody anymore. There's those kind of pressures going on. But actually, if you just look at what happened to the farmers in Western Washington, basically in the whole state of Washington, it affected the entire state one way or another. They had so many hurdles to cross just to get their crops growing this year. And I mean, they know already that they're not going to harvest as much as they've harvested in the past. And just a little side note, everything here on our homestead is growing really well, but some of it is behind, like the corn, which should have been knee-high in July, is barely over knee-high right now. And myself, like some of these farmers, commercial, you know, growers, are hoping that there's an extended summer, that we have, you know, heat into October, sunny, hot days into October. And that's not what I'm really hearing from some of the, climate scientists who claim they can predict what the next season is going to be like. You know, they're calling for, well, some of them are calling for a cold, wet, extended fall, winter, and spring. So that's going to hurt. Because if you remember what happened in Washington and part of Oregon, too, I mean, you know, it just kind of extended throughout the whole Pacific Northwest here, is that we had winter kind of just kept going. Like, I remember, I even have videos of it snowing here in Oregon in April or May this year, which, you know, is, like, unheard of, in the valley. And, you know, that cold, wet weather prevented farmers from getting their crops in the ground when they should have been in the ground, or after they were in the ground. If they had some, you know, sprouting and some plants come up and then freeze and die, well, that didn't do any good. Not only that, if the crops did grow and then, you know, it was just rain and snow, then a lot of pollination didn't occur, so they weren't getting the fruit from whatever crop they had planted. And that happened a lot in the fruit orchards. Okay. I just noticed a note in there in the chat room. Yeah, so I'm live on Wednesdays and Saturdays at 9 p.m. Eastern, so we probably need to change that if it's not like that. I don't know which thing it's showing up on, but we'll fix it. Whatever it is, we'll fix it. But anyway, so yeah, a lot of the fruit trees didn't produce as much fruit because there wasn't as much pollination going on. The bees didn't fly. You remember, we got bees earlier this year, I think in March or April, as a matter of fact, because we were kind of worried about them, that it was cold and wet for so long that they wouldn't be doing very well. And then it turns out that now they're doing outstanding. And the beekeeper has added a couple more boxes, so we have more bees. We have 6 boxes now instead of 4. And but all of that stuff has affected, you know, crops here in the Pacific Northwest. So if you're, you know, if you depend on some of those crops, you know, some of that stuff just isn't going to make it to market. For example, guy who had wheat fields, and he also planted ryegrass. Well, the ryegrass grew fantastically, but the wheat didn't, you know, come up and sprout and, you know, isn't going to go to seed because the ryegrass basically overtook the wheat like crazy. So, you know, there's going to be like so much less wheat available on the market. And let's see what else they had to say about this. We're going to let it go. So he was talking about the weather delayed planting and interfered with pollination. The Snohomish County farmer Andrew Albert said he likes to finish harvesting silage corn the first week of October. No way that's going to happen this year, he said. We're going to let it go as long as we can. If we can get a rainy fall, it's going to be ugly. See, if we get a rainy fall, it's going to be ugly. So they're hoping to have an extended summer, but you know, you never know. That's the thing. That's the thing about being a farmer, for crying out loud. You are at the mercy of Mother Nature. You know, and on top of that, you have man trying to get in the mix there. You have people, you know, governments who think that they need to control water flow and irrigation and fertilizer application and all that stuff when farmers are just trying to grow food, man, to feed the people. And you have so many interferences, including Mother Nature. And, you know, so like here on the homestead here, Ravenwood, we had a meal on, I think it was Thursday. Yeah, Crystal made a, I'm thinking, a curry dish. And basically, they just went down in the garden and pulled a bunch of vegetables that we had in the garden that were ready to eat and put it in the curry sauce that she had made. And I think they made rice. Oh, and some kind of noodle, some edamame noodle to serve it on. It was fantastic, man, and it was so nice. And I was looking down there today at how many squash there are. Like summer squash, I love those yellow crooked neck summer squash. There's a bunch of them. Like we're going to have to start eating them or drying them or doing something to preserve them because we're not going to be able to eat them fast enough. But we will be able to provide some food to other people. You know, nothing's going to go to waste. We'll either eat it or we'll pass it on and people will have food. But back to the Washington farmers, man, like every single one of these crops has been, you know, in one way or another delayed or hindered in being able to be produced at its peak efficiency. It's definitely a unique year to farm, said Tristan Klesek, who grows vegetables in Snohomish County. For sure, we're looking forward to putting this year in the rearview mirror and starting fresh next year. We considered the spring a bust, he said. The weather was the primary factor. We just didn't have enough good weather windows to get any work done. And man, that's true. Like even if it was sunny for 2 or 3 days, it had rained so much that it was just mud. So they had to wait till the soil got to a certain, you know, like humidity level so that they could actually get their tractors out there and till and plant and not get stuck. Yeah, he says the federal climate prediction He said the weather eventually dried out, but it was followed by a heat wave in late July that shrank raspberries. So see, like, because it was hot for so long, the water that had been, you know, good for a number of the different crops, actually the heat kind of took that away by sucking the moisture out of some of the berries. Let's see what else. So too much water, but the farmers had to deal with too much water in some places. In Lewis County in southwest Washington, farmer Dave Fenn said ryegrass flourished in his barley fields. In some places, the grass was so thick that his fields only produced silage rather than a barley crop. You know, and here's the thing about all of this stuff. Like, that silage is probably produced to feed to some animals so that those animals can be brought to market. Beef, hogs, lamb, you know, whatever. I think sheep are mostly pastured, though. I don't know about that. But, you know, so there's going to be some of that food that we were hoping was going to be turned into barley or wheat. You know, it's just going to be silage now, and it's going to be fed to other animals that hopefully come to the dinner table eventually. Let's see. Let's see what else they had. Oh, and of course the input prices. So farmers have to buy materials so that they can produce food, right? But not only do they have to, like, buy the seeds that they're going to plant, they also have to buy fuel, which is, you know, sky high this year. They have to buy, let's say when they pack whatever product, if it sits too long, or the plastic gets torn, they have to buy more plastic, you know, because they wrap a lot of this stuff in plastic. If they have to repair a damaged plastic bale, they have to use tape. Tape also is more expensive. The plastic is more expensive. The supply is low and the demand is high, so prices are higher. So all of these things are going to affect us in the long run, one way or another. And I'm basically trying to tell the story of just what happened in Washington, just one state, because it's close to me and because I get this Capital Press, which this article comes from, I'm able to kind of share this idea that, you know, look around you and be ready. You know, what kind of impacts has there been on the food that comes out of you know, the area that you live in? And, you know, how is it going to impact your ability to get a hold of food? And, you know, not a bad idea, I've said this a number of times lately, but start looking for the wild foods that are around you that you don't have to actually put any effort into growing, but you can harvest. And then figure out how to harvest it in the most efficient way possible so that you don't destroy it completely if it's one of those foods that you can take little parts of and it'll grow more little parts. You know, do that, and you'll always have some food supply to go back to, you know, just in case, man. I'm just saying, I don't know what this next period of time is going to bring. I just hope, like, you know, it's kind of funny, and I've said this before too. Oh, and by the way, I am not on any pain meds. I got to have a drink though, and it's not that kind of drink. All right, you know, I've said before that even when I was in college, so after I got out of the service the first time and went to college, I just wanted to know how to preserve food. And I wanted to know how to can food. I wanted to know how to dry food. I wanted to know how to make food. Like, I learned how to make cinnamon rolls because I love cinnamon rolls. I wanted to learn how to make biscuits from scratch because I wanted to know how to make biscuits from scratch. Like, they don't always come in a little, you know, compressed can that you crack open and peel out six biscuits and throw it in a pan and cook them. They actually used to be made from scratch, you know, and I remember my mom doing that when I was young. Anyway, so I've always kind of been in this mode to know how food is made and how you go about getting food. So it's not always been about survival and prepping necessarily, but it has been about like how is this stuff done? Like, how is it that you get, you know, flour from wheat? Now, that's one thing I've only done once in my life. That's hard work too, by the way, to get it right. But yeah, so I just like to pass along ideas so you can be thinking about, like, trying it yourself, you know, like this wild spinach I talked about a week or so ago. Man, that was just a bonus find in the weeds amongst our nice garden down there. Like, we did kind of isolate the plants that are producing real food, but still you get weeds growing up in there. If you're not down there every day weeding, you know, you're going to get weeds, but one of those weeds happens to be this beneficial plant, you know, wild spinach that you can just pull the leaves off of and use the greens just like you would use spinach, you know, eat them raw, eat them cooked, put them in omelets or, you know, whatever, quiche, or just have them, you know, steamed or whatever. They're fantastic, and it's fantastic, and it was free. I didn't have to do anything except go down and pick it up, so... Yeah, that was interesting. Okay, let's get on to the... Well, let's see if I have anything anything fun to talk about. I don't know. Maybe not. I really want to get to this whole Trump thing, man, because it has been the like craziest week as far as the Trump raid goes and the whole FBI thing. And the fallout on both sides of, if there are two sides to this issue, it was the craziest thing for me to kind of watch and listen to this thing go on and then watch the fallout of it over the next several days. And, you know, I did a show, I don't know if it was a Moto Take 5 or another Take 5, but I did a show on all the mistakes and missteps that the FBI has had is concerning ex-President Donald Trump. And I mean, that list was, I have it right here. Glenn Beck did this list originally. That's where I got the portion of it from. It is stunning. Even the short list of lies that have been faked against Donald Trump. Remember the allegations about bank servers? Trump was pinging a bank, untrue. Carter Page is a Russian spy, untrue. Donald Trump is a Russian spy, untrue. Collusion with Russia, untrue. The Ukraine, perfect phone call, not true. It wasn't a perfect phone call. It wasn't even impeachable. The P-tape dossier, none of it was true. None of those things were true. They were all brought up by the FBI. Oh, and by the way, that reminds me, there was something else. Oh, yeah, so the FBI, this is not about Trump, but remember the FBI actually, I got to find this real quick. FBI Director Christopher Wray indicated that an agent who headed the agency's Detroit field office when FBI operatives allegedly entrapped people into planning to kidnap Michigan's governor is currently in charge of the D.C. field office. So do you follow me here? So the Detroit field office supervisor, who was the supervisor, when these FBI operatives entrapped people into planning to kidnap Michigan's governor, he now got promoted to the D.C. field office, okay? Now let me ask you. Like, in what universe do you head up, something that gets so jacked up that you have field FBI agents coercing people into kidnapping a Michigan governor? That happens on your watch as you're the supervisor and somehow you get promoted to a different division, a different field office. Only in the federal government, and I saw this time and time again when I was employed by the federal government, you know, it really had nothing to do with your experiences and your truly the things that you can, the things that you would do really well, or the people who were really talented and actually knew what they were doing, that really didn't matter. It was all about political correctness, even back in the day. And I don't know much about the guy who, you know, was in charge during that whole kidnapping escapade and how he got promoted to, you know, the DC field office and what that even means. But the point is, the Federal Bureau of Investigation actually tried to get people like they were the ones who instigated the kidnapping of the Michigan governor. It wasn't some, you know, right-wing extremist. It wasn't Antifa. It wasn't Black Lives Matter. It wasn't any certain, you know, sect of people who decided that they were going to go kidnap the governor of Michigan. It was the FBI who said, hey, we're going to create this situation where people kidnap the governor of Michigan. The FBI did that. Yeah, you talk about losing faith and the American people losing faith in the FBI, if they ever had any. I mean, there was a time in my life, I'm sure, I thought, oh, you know, the FBI and the CIA and the NSA, all these people, you know, they have our best interests at heart. They're looking out for us. But holy crap, man. This has turned into like the Keystone Cops. In fact, I did a show, I don't know, the last night or the night before, and I titled it something like the FBI raids Trump house to retrieve an overdue library book, because that's about what it comes down to. You know, the Keystone Cops going in there trying to make it look like something that obviously doesn't exist. I mean, if you followed this story much at all, you know, those documents have been accounted for. There's nothing like secret about those documents other than, I mean, there's really nothing secret about where those documents were or are and what those documents were or are. So you can pretty much bet that they're just trying to plan so that, you know, like the next step in the Trump annihilation system. And what's really sad about the whole thing is they're only making it more easier and easier for Trump to get elected because people are pissed. Not that they weren't before, but now they're even more pissed. It's like, okay, you guys are really overstepping your bounds here. Not only that, but there must be a really good reason why Trump needs to be reelected if you guys are striving so hard to stop him from being reelected. And, you know, I can think of several scenarios that might happen here in the next couple of years. I mean, the one scenario is nothing happens, you know, that we're all fooled you know, there's no election, or the elections are stolen or messed up again. And who knows, the Republicans, they're still quite capable of screwing up even a wide open chance to take over the House and Senate. They could still mess that up. In fact, you know, some could argue that they work harder and harder on it every day. But, you know, let's say, so what are they going to do? I mean, they're going to put Trump in prison next. And I think that's what, you know, that's what some people are talking about, you know, the division of the country. And by the way, let me just say, I wish we could all stop the right and left for a minute and go after the bastards who are actually causing this. Because once they were eliminated, we could get back to having just our regular old patriotic arguments back and forth. You know, which way is better. But as long as we have, you know, outside interference from the World Economic Forum, from the Illuminati, from the shadow government, from whoever you want to say, you know, the main financial institutions that are backing all of the mainstream media and all the advertisers for pretty much every single information show out there, you know, as long as you toe the line, you're going to have advertisers. But if you slightly step out of line, your advertisers are gone and then you're gone. And thank God for other platforms now, like Rumble, Odyssey, BitChute, Truth Social, Minds. I'm sure there's, you know, Parler, Gab. I don't know. There's a bunch of other platforms out there where people are continuing to go and visit, and the numbers are increasing constantly. And people are looking for the truth. So I'm grateful for that, and I'm grateful that people are still looking for the truth. But yeah, as long as you know, other people are involved, yeah, we're going to continue doing exactly what they want us to do, and that's to bicker and fight with each other instead of eliminating them, taking them out of the picture, and moving on. And I'm not saying FBI, for crying out loud. I don't need any of that trouble. But, you know, it kind of made me think. So then the FBI, let me just see here. Let's see what... The FBI is investigating an unprecedented number of threats against bureau personnel and property in the wake... Now listen to this story, because this is so stupid. In the wake of the search of former President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort, including some against agents listed in the court records as being involved in the recent search. The FBI declined to comment on any specific threats against bureau employees. So you see what they're saying? They're saying that there's all these threats, but they're also saying, but we can't comment on any of them. Which means there probably wasn't nearly as many as they're claiming, but, you know, kind of part of the narrative to continue to divide the country is for the FBI to have gone in on behalf of the left, or Biden, or Pelosi, or the Democrats, or the progressive, whoever you want to say, that the FBI has aligned with, to go into Trump's home and retrieve documents that everybody knew was there, that everybody knew. They'd already told him to put another lock on the door, so they already had been there and seen that the documents were there. So there's nothing here. But as long as we continue to be divided, as long as the FBI can say, hey, you know, we did this thing on behalf of, let's just say, the left right now. That'll cover most of it. And then the left is like, oh, yay, Trump's going to get hung, or Trump's going to prison, or Trump's going to be impeached, you know, again, as a private citizen. He can't be. But, you know, they're on the yay side. And then on the right is like, hey, the FBI sucks. You know, they shouldn't be able to do this. They ought to quit acting on behalf of a political ally, Biden, you know, to go after ex-President Trump, using the power of the FBI to do that. And of course it's going to piss off the right or the other side, who's not aligned with the FBI's practices right now. But as long as they can then come out and say, the FBI can then come out and say, hey, there's an unprecedented number of threats against bureau personnel and property, and of course they're going to try and blame that on the right, because the right isn't aligned with the FBI right now, which kind of reminds me, who was it who stood up for the federal buildings in Portland, for example? It was the right when Antifa was burning them down, was, you know, attacking federal buildings in Portland. I know it happened in other cities throughout the country too, but I mean, I'm familiar with Portland because it's like 50 miles away from here. And I paid attention as like, hey, you know, people stood in the way of rioters trying to attack the federal buildings. Antifa and BLM and rioters in Portland who were going after the federal buildings day after day, night after night, going after those employees day after day, night after night. You know, it was right-wingers who were standing in the way, who were helping protect those buildings. But somehow the right wing is the enemy now because Biden's in charge. Do you see what I'm saying? The division is being artificially presented. The division is being made by other than citizens of the United States. And as long as we just keep doing what they want us to do, you know, as long as we keep falling in line with their desires, as long as we keep hating each other for reasons that we don't really hate each other for, but they keep stirring the pot, yeah, we're not going to move forward. So what I was saying about what's going to happen in the next 2 years, who knows, maybe in November the conservatives take the House and the Senate, and the government comes to a stalemate, you know, which is always my goal, of course, is that the government never do a damn thing because they only tend to screw things up 100%. No matter, even if they have good intentions, they end up screwing things up totally. But let's say, okay, so let's say the conservatives take the House and the Senate. Then what do we do? For 2 years, nothing happens, which is also kind of dangerous because for 2 years, basically, you're going to be waiting for something, you know, and the left will be attacking the right like, hey, you know, the Republicans own the House and the Senate. Why aren't you doing anything? And, of course, the Democrats won't be able to do anything because nothing that they present is going to get passed in the House or the Senate because they'll be a minority. And everybody knows that everybody in politics, everybody in D.C. is only trying to pass stuff so they can get more money for whatever thing it is that they're trying to push at the time. And we've already kind of printed enough money for decades, maybe for centuries. So, you know, what's going to happen? I don't know. But I can tell you this. I don't think anything could possibly happen that to stop Trump from getting reelected. As much as I don't like that result, it's like inevitable now. Let's say he goes to prison. He won't. But let's say he goes to prison. What's to stop him from running for office? What's to stop him? What is to stop whoever gets elected from pardoning him and letting him out and, you know, expunging that record? And do you think just because Trump would be in prison that he wouldn't have any pull? Look at all the people that he endorsed that have been elected. Even here just north in Washington State, Joe Kent, who, you know, on the election day, he was way behind Jamie Herrera Butler, which I'm glad to see her go because she voted to impeach Trump. And I think that was a stupid thing to do. It was a stupid thing to do, especially on the weak information that she had. But maybe it made some of her constituents happy, and maybe she thought that was going to be the right thing to do for her reelection. Well, guess what? She got the boot, and Joe Kent is now the nominee to run against whatever Democrat they put up against him to take this seat in Washington. Now, you didn't hear that on the mainstream media. You didn't hear that in the news. Matter of fact, the only thing you heard about that race was on that election day, that primary election day, they said Trump had 8 out of 10 of his endorsements get elected because, you know, one of the other two that didn't was Joe Kent. And it turns out that Joe Kent did get elected and win that election over Jamie Herrera Butler. But you didn't hear that again in the news later that now it was 9 out of 10. But yeah, Trump wields a lot of power just in the people that he's already endorsed. And do you think those people are going to forget what he did to help them get elected? Of course not. I mean, that's not true. There'll be one or two along the way who lose their way and think that suddenly they have massive power because they got elected and they may ditch, you know, any support for Trump. But think of all of the people that he's endorsed over this election cycle. He has a ton of support. So whether he actually becomes, is the elected president or not in 2024, he is going to wield massive influence on whatever, you know, over whatever is going to happen. Whoever gets elected is basically, I don't know if they're going to be able to have their own presidency, even, to be honest with you, because everybody's just expecting Trump to come back and do whatever it is he does. And you know, his influence is going to be there. It's going to constantly be there. I was kind of losing my train of thought there. Oh yeah, so even if he was in prison. Okay, so let's say DeSantis runs. What if DeSantis runs and puts Trump on as vice president because Trump's in prison? Which, this is just far-fetched, okay? Like, I can't imagine any one of these things, any one of these documents, they're not stolen documents. I mean, he had them and was storing them as they advised him to do. So whatever it is that they went in and did, it has nothing to do with these documents. But let's just say, you know, I guess the worst case scenario is that that they just imprison Trump for no reason at all. They just say, look, you know, we don't really have a reason. We're just going to put you in prison so that you can't run for the presidency. I think that's how terrified they are. And honestly, I don't think that's enough. I honestly think the worst case scenario is that they create some way of killing Trump. And he already seems like he's got a weak link, like maybe somebody, I don't know, somebody tipped off the FBI. I don't know. I've seen these, like, theories come out that, you know, some insider close to Trump tipped off the FBI. But what did they have to tip off the FBI for? The documents were already known. They were accounted for. They were being stored at Trump's place. Everybody knew it. So that's not it. It's something else. They're looking for something else. As they have for, what, 5-6 years now? Just imagine this. This stuff started before Trump became president. And since he became president, the Keystone Cops of the federal government have tried every imaginable ploy, dreaming stuff up, literally making stuff up to catch him. And he did none of it. Like, every single thing that they accused him of, every single thing that they brought up, you know, the Steele dossier, all this stuff, they made it up, and they knew they made it up, and they were just trying to get it to stick. They were just trying to get some dirt, like literally kind of, you know, dust him up with a little dirt so that people just keep thinking he's dirty, and he just keeps coming out clean. So if they get desperate enough, what would keep them from killing him? It's been done before. I saw it with my own eyes. Not sure, you know. everybody has their own opinions about that kind of stuff, but I said the same thing about Biden recently, you know. What's to say that they're not assassinating Biden right in front of our eyes? I mean, here's the deal. The people who are running the world, they don't care about these individual people. They don't care about Biden. He just happened to be the person who's currently holding the office of the President of the United States, but they don't really care about him. They just put their next, you know, person in. You know, and if he becomes too much trouble with his frailties, why wouldn't they just take him out with a booster? You know, COVID. He has long COVID. He has COVID dementia. He's not able to perform anymore. You know, and maybe he did, maybe he didn't. Maybe he got it from a needle. Don't know. But who would these intelligence agencies have a long reach. And they're dirty. I mean, they're dirty. They tried to put innocent people in prison because they set them up to kidnap a sitting governor. Like, the people didn't do it. The FBI literally set innocent people up as potential kidnappers. And they were going to go through with the... In fact, they went through with the trials, but the trials fell apart because everybody kind of pleaded, you know, witnessed that, hey, it was these FBI agents who set this whole thing up. Like, we weren't going to do anything like that, but they kind of put the whole thing together and invited us to go do it. Come on, man. But yeah, they are so desperate. They, the left, and the World Economic Forum, by the way, they can't have Trump as president. They just can't, because he doesn't play by their rules. He does have a different vision for America, I believe. And, yeah, it doesn't fit with their narrative, which kind of reminds me, you know, they want you to be unarmed. That's their goal. They want you to be unarmed. They want us, America, the United States of America, to be unarmed. That will be the final straw. When they do actually take our weapons, when it comes down to that, that will be the final straw, one way or the other. It'll be the final straw, as in those of us with, you know, weapons will use them for the reason that we have them. And those that want to take them, once they take them, it's over. You have no way to defend yourself. You no longer have civil rights. Once that weapon is gone, what are you gonna fight for your rights with? A shovel? Yeah. A shovel against, you know, military grade, full automatic weapons, armored piercing rounds, you know, grenades, rocket launchers. You're not going to win. And they know that. They know the only reason our civil rights still exist is because we still have guns. And I wish everybody had a gun. I wish everybody had one gun, honest to God. And wasn't afraid to use it. Yeah, that was long. I don't even think I covered everything I wanted to cover. Yeah, I think I really probably did as far as that goes. So here's some interesting. Let's just go through some of these interesting stories here. maybe. Come on, baby. Yeah, let's go down here. This was kind of interesting. I didn't know this was going on, but Patrick Collins, CEO of The Gun Food, thegunfood.com, says he's lost thousands of dollars worth of ammunition. Why? Because customers' orders don't always seem to make it to their doors, especially when delivering with UPS. In fact, he says, out of 18,000 rounds of ammunition shipped through the UPS, only a third were actually delivered. Yeah, so where is that? You know, where did that ammo go? Like, who's taking that ammo? Oh, and by the way, I mean the IRS buying up ammo. Maybe that's where it's going. Maybe the UPS is taking this ammo and stockpiling it for the new 87,000 IRS agents who have to, you know, swear an oath of being able to take somebody's life if they don't pay their taxes. And they said it so that they can recoup money from billionaires. They're not going to. They don't need 87,000 IRS agents to go after billionaires. How many billionaires are there in the world right now? Here, let's just ask. How many billionaires are there in the world? Whoops. I don't think I've ever actually typed something in a search before on live on the air. Let's see. I don't want to see an ad. There are 2,700 billionaires. Okay. There's 2,700 billionaires in the world right now. So I don't think you need 87,000 IRS agents to get 2,700 billionaires, right? And I mean, that's assuming that all 2,700 billionaires are not paying their taxes. They're legally owed taxes. 87,000 new IRS agents. That was in this new bill they just passed, the Inflation Reduction Act. I can't wait to see how this pans out. Yeah, no, it's not going to be good. But they want all those new federal IRS agents to carry guns, to be able to carry a gun, to take an oath to kill people, to kill fellow citizens of the United States. So, that'll be interesting. I don't know. But, I mean, there you go. But they need guns to do it, right? They need guns to go collect taxes. They don't want you to have guns to protect your civil rights, which may include not paying taxes. Legally, not paying taxes. Scary times we're living in, for sure. I mean, you never know when. There's going to be that trigger point, you know? Like the shootout at the OK Corral. You know, I can't remember who really fired that first shot. Same with the Civil War. Maybe not the Civil War. Maybe it was the Revolutionary War. You know, and the soldiers were standing face to face in a field and somebody touched off a round and that was it. It was on. And you don't know what that one spark is going to be. I know there are a lot of civilized people that are still holding on to this idea that, you know, everything's going to change when we have an opportunity to vote again. And I'm fairly cautious in believing that we are anywhere in the realm of possibility of there being ever a fair election again. I think even with some of these primaries that we had recently, there was some stuff going on. You know, even here in the Pacific Northwest, where they already had one screw up. Hang on, I got to get a drink. They had one screw up where they had these ballots that had a barcode on them that couldn't be read properly. And the person who was in charge of that was supposed to, you know, really tighten up their game for this primary election. Guess what? Didn't happen. They screwed up the primary election. They put the wrong pamphlets in the wrong envelopes to send out to the peeps. How do you do that when you're already under scrutiny? Anyway, but I know a lot of people are holding on to the thought that all we have to do is vote these bastards out and things are going to change. But are they really going to change? You know, tech companies are still in charge of tech. They still own the pipeline. They still control the narrative of the masses. There's still a huge population of people out there who only get their information from these social media platforms that are controlled by, you know, the big five companies that own everything. You still have Twitter censoring people. You still have companies like Verizon that will censor companies and not allow companies to, you know, participate in a free speech platform. You still have control of information from the mainstream media and all of the companies that they control, you know, through marketing, that they control because they own every single one of those companies in their own, you know, they literally own every single company that advertises on any platform anywhere. That's why it's really important that we get the word out about, you know, the information we're putting out on Real Liberty Media. You know, we're going to have more people come and do shows. We're going to get more information out. We're going to have more people coming through the website, coming and visiting the chat room and listening to shows either on podcast or streaming or coming and joining us live. Now's the time. I mean, I just believe that everybody can pass on good information. Everybody can pass on crappy information, so why can't everybody pass on good information? You know, I have my own ideas. I like to talk, obviously. I like to think, obviously. You know, I'm sure I'm not always 100% right. I mean, I have some pretty far-fetched ideas about some things that go on in the world. But we got to be able to have the conversation. You know, anymore, the right and the left, we don't even have the conversations anymore. You know, when I have people who are left-leaning in my world, I know them. I see them every day. I do have less and less tolerance for them, but... Yeah, out of time. That went by fast. That was an awesome time. I'll see you guys on Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern.